there's a lot of people that would come out of that. It was a miserable time. Like I wouldn't say I was enjoying it. I was learning a lot and I'd thrive in a really busy, high-paced environment, but I was biting off more than I could chew and was not home. So as terrible as that was, to look back and realize the blessings in it, I think takes a lot of reflection. And that's the difference between the gold miner, someone that's willing to look for the positive in maybe a negative situation.
Absolutely. I think it's funny that you were like, okay, I'm out of my element. These people want to know how to do the wedding and all that. And it goes back to what were three guys thinking and starting a wedding venue, but it turned out.
In this episode of The Rural Entrepreneur's Gold, we'll hear from Blaine Mikkonen, who is co-founder and partner of a few different businesses located in rural Davenport, North Dakota. That Mikkonen name is perhaps familiar because he's my son, who also happens to have some great rural entrepreneurial stories to tell. Grain Designs builds custom furniture, desks, and decor for businesses and homes specializing in using reclaimed materials. The Pines Wedding and Events venue, located on the same property as Grain Designs, is a 9,600 square foot stunning wedding venue. We'll hear about the ups and downs of building these businesses into the success they are today, and how, pray tell, a group of guys ended up thinking building a wedding venue was a great idea, and how they made it into one of the top rated venues in the entire Fargo-Moorhead area. I'm Christy Mikkonen, your host for today's show, and while I might be a little partial to this guest, I can't tell you how excited I am to share this story. Now let's get started.
We have with us Blaine Mikkonen, who is a co-owner and founder of Grain Designs and the Pines Wedding and Events venue. And he started this business with a college roommate. They had made some furniture, you know, being poor college kids that most are. And here it ends up to be the business that we start right after graduation. And he's going to tell us all about that and how a move to a rural location of their business helped create another business. So without further ado, I'm really excited. He's also my son, so proud mom moment. I'm going to dive right in and say, welcome Blaine to the Gold Miners.
Thank you very much and appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. So I'm just going to jump right into the meat of this and have you share with us. Okay, Grain Designs is a custom furniture and home decor business, and you build everything out of reclaimed wood, correct?
Yeah, when we started, we were definitely building everything from reclaimed wood. Now, the primary focus is reclaimed wood, although we dabble well beyond that, wood and metal. But when we started, we thought that that was the most significant part of the business. And I guess as business has evolved and clients evolved and we got asked to do other things, the business really evolved and really, really evolved over the last 3 years into something completely unrelated to Grain Designs, obviously.
Absolutely. So tell us first about how you guys got started. You made some furniture in college and everybody went, oh my gosh.
Well, I don't know if they went, oh my gosh, to start, because it was just playing beer pong on the furniture and literally it was out of necessity. So it was 2013. I was getting my master's in architecture here at NDSU, rented a apartment with two of my other buddies or three of my other buddies. And I don't recall if it was out of necessity because we didn't have any money or just because we had a little free time or maybe a bit of both, but we decided to build all the furniture for our apartment. So we built a custom dining table, coffee table, like a wall decor or something for the entryway and a few other things that as we were building them, we had discussed this and wrote the business plan in college, knowing that we enjoyed building furniture, modeling and doing things with our hands. And all three of us had worked in architecture firms through school. And we were all in agreement that after building this furniture, we really enjoyed the design and the challenge that architecture brings, and that you get to design something. And the challenge was all of us had worked in firms for a few years and never seen one of our projects come to life. There was never anything tangible. So this, we were able to design something 1 week, build it, and have a tangible and functional object within you know, 7 to 10 days. Whether the quality was remarkable or not, it was rewarding and it served a great purpose.
So after graduation, you came back to the farm because you grew up on a farm. You probably even thought, if I recall, that you were going to go back to the farm and work because you weren't going to work in an architecture firm, right?
Yeah, I don't know if there was a defining moment that turned, but all through school, I had no intentions of executing on my college degree. I knew it was a great backup plan. I could work in an office in the winter. And I did. I farmed all summer and went to school all winter and worked in firms both through the summer and winter. So I had exposure, but my passion was in farming. I really enjoyed it. So I was intending to go back and farm. And then in 2013, I had graduated college. My girlfriend at the time, now my wife, was going back to school at MSUM in Moorhead. So I was still farming at the time. I had to commute back and forth for harvest. So it wasn't possible for me to come up here and get a job because I would have to leave in 2 weeks and return to harvest. So as an alternative, I just decided to bring my tools, actually my grandpa's tools, up from the farm and started building furniture in my garage. And as any college student would do, the first night we were back here in the Fargo-Moorhead area, we went out to the bar and ran into my old business, or my old school colleague that I had wrote the business plan with. And he's like, "Oh, what the hell are you doing in town? I thought you were farming." And I just kind of explained that I'm back in town for a couple of weeks and I'll be back and forth, but I'm going to build furniture in the meantime. And he's like, "Awesome. When are we starting?" So he was doing landscaping on the side for his summer. And that was kind of wrapping up the project that he was working on. So the next morning we started building furniture, or probably the next afternoon, if I had to guess. And we started building furniture in our garage, my apartment garage. And then over the next couple of weeks, we reached out to a local business that has a junk market that kind of similar to a street fair, and asked if we could sell our products there. And she told us no, she was full. So over the next week and a half, we continued to build furniture and go knock on her door until she allowed us to sell.
I interviewed her earlier, and I think she has a slightly different story, but that's funny. So you did the junk market, and first of all, I recall before the junk market, because you had no idea how to price this stuff. And so you called some interior designers, right?
Yeah, even as far back as then, we were trying to leverage the few relationships that we had in the area, and one of which was an interior designer that did a lot of high-end homes. So we just asked if she would recommend any pricing, and she started throwing out prices in the thousands and even thousands more than we were anticipating we would sell our furniture for, which was, in hindsight, probably the best advice we ever got, because if we had priced ourselves so low, we'd never have a business. But we got a great response at the first junk market, sold a few things that went really well, and used all the profits to start buying tools. And that was kind of the MO for the first 3 months between harvesting and building furniture, was every profit we got, keep putting it back into the business until pretty soon we had outgrown the garage. And then things started to get real, and Grant started, my business partner, started to say, "Well, we should rent a garage or rent a shop." And at that point, I was still thinking I was farming. So I was really hesitant, but I don't know if, I'm not sure, maybe it was just to end the conversation. I said, "Yeah, let's do it." And ended up signing a 5-year lease on a place that we couldn't afford. So at that point, we had no option but to keep building furniture.
I didn't realize it was a 5-year lease either. Wow. Okay. So transition to, was that the garage over in West Fargo?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. All right. So you're building furniture and you're moving along. What was your first big break in your business?
At a point when we were still in the garage, we had a client. I don't recall how he heard about us. It was word of mouth. He had not seen us anywhere else, but he started calling our phone number 2 or 3 times. And we really, I don't know that we had it published anywhere. So he had gotten it from somewhere and was adamant that he'd come over that day to visit our business. And we didn't really want to reveal that we were in an apartment garage, but he was adamant that he'd come visit us. And he pulled up in his vehicle, and he was working out west in the oil fields and owned a couple oil companies. And he wrote us a $2,000 check and said, I want your cow print, which my business partner did some photography. And he said, I want the biggest one you have, and I want a 10-foot dining table for a condo in Minneapolis or Duluth. And we can figure out what it costs afterwards, but this is a downstroke to get you going. And it just really caught us off guard that, one, that there was even this type of money. I mean, this is just something completely unknown to us that people would throw $2,000 around on two guys in a garage. But that was the defining moment that we were like, okay, maybe there is something that people will get behind here. I mean, it was kind of that and the junk market that just kind of solidified. It gave us the confidence to move forward, I think.
That's awesome. So how soon after this client and junk market did the Bison Wood? Because I think that was a huge boost to you in your business.
Yeah. That was the first real chance we took on our business, for sure. We still definitely were not cash flow positive. We weren't taking a salary because it was within the first year and a half, I presume. The defining moment, the first big chance that we took on our business was definitely purchasing the Bison Wood. And for those that aren't familiar, NDSU in North Dakota is a big football team, is the Bison, or big sports team. And they were building a new sports facility, and we had the opportunity to buy the bleachers. And at the time, we were still traveling to South Dakota, traveling to rural Minnesota and North Dakota farms to tear down barns and use reclaimed wood, was kind of the premise of the business, and share the story of where the wood was from. So the fact that this wood was full of history and had a story to share was something that we thought resonated with our business. We also went to NDSU and just thought it had a lot of marketing leverage. And that really did put us on the map in terms of the Fargo area, because it magazines and newspapers, and we felt like celebrities for a couple of days with all the calls we were getting. And it wasn't too long after that Scheels was calling them to carry our products in all of their stores in the region. So
Scheels, for those that don't know, Scheels is a big sports store in the Midwest, and probably the biggest sports store, and even headquartered out of Fargo. So yeah, that was huge boost.
Yeah, and growing well beyond the Midwest. Now they're pretty well a national company, but to be able to put our Grand Designs brand throughout Scheels in the Midwest and get that brand recognition, both in the media and from a company like that, really gave us some.
Yeah. I remember thinking at the time, oh my gosh, these poor guys, they're having this huge success with this Bison Wood from the Bison Arena, and they're making all cool things and they're in the news. They're like early, and now it's just going to be, then the design conference happened, and Maria from Eco Chic had this design conference. And how did you guys get involved with that?
Well, Maria was the one at Eco Chic that was hosting the initial junk market. So we had been business friends at this point for probably a year and a half. When we had enough products, we turned to Maria and asked for permission to sell in her store, and kind of carved out the first Grand Designs retail experience in the corner of her store and paid her a commission. So at that point, we had already gotten enough press and had a relationship with her that when she wanted to host the design conference, the Grand Designs brand locally had enough clout that it made sense to align as a partner on the stage. There was a lot of people that, compared to the HGTV personalities that we were presenting alongside, of course, there was no clout, but it definitely was, it made sense for the show that she was trying to put on. So we had the opportunity to present at a few different design conferences, which is essentially a seminar, a day-long seminar with vendors and various speakers that were talking design. And the first design conference was with Chip and Joanna Gaines, early Chip and Joanna Gaines, before they were ultra famous, but I mean, they were definitely very up and coming and very well known. So the opportunity to present on the stage alongside them was obviously a great feather in the hat.
Huge. Yeah. And you went on to present at a couple other design conferences with other people as well.
Yeah, they continued to have that event for a couple of years. The Property Brothers were in town, so we got to mingle with them and went out and socialized with them for a while. So we got to know them, and with Chip and Joe too, got to have dinner with them, and beyond just speaking on the same stage, actually got to visit with them. The other, Ree Drummond and Chip Wade, as well as the wood guy from Chip and Joanna. I don't recall his name off the top of my head, but yeah, there was a few personalities, and I mean, genuinely, for the most part, they were all great people, and it was a pleasure to meet them.
Yeah, awesome. So take us to the point at which you moved out to the farm and how you ended up where you are making this rural move.
So growing up on the farm and our business based around essentially agriculture and agricultural barns, and we were tearing down barns or sometimes houses, but these were generally in rural areas. So through our reclamation as a company, like, my business partners also love hunting, and they began to grow an appreciation for, they grew up in town and began to really appreciate being out of town. So we had an opportunity. We had a client that had ordered a bunch of furniture, and we delivered it to her lake home. And at the time that we were delivering, she said, I just had a friend that has a shop available. Her husband had just passed away, and they were farmers in the area, and was curious if we were looking to expand our shop. And at the time, we definitely weren't actively looking, but we went out there and kind of fell in love with the property and negotiated a lease that made sense for us. And we had the opportunity to move out to the farm. And I believe that was probably 2015. So we went from garage to like a 1400 square foot shop to a 3,600 square foot shop, all within the period of about 18 months. And it was two or three different times that we were stepping well beyond our means and really extending the time that we weren't, just prolonging the period in which we weren't going to get to pay ourselves, because we couldn't afford that shop either, but we thought we should see how much overhead we could tolerate. So
you have a wicked sense of humor there, buddy. So you're on this farm, and something that was really cool. Now, we ended up having an auction at the farm probably 3-4 months after you guys started working there, right?
Yeah, so we got there shortly after they stopped farming, or the husband had passed. So the sons were still coming back and kind of getting the farm cleaned up, and they were having an auction to kind of liquidate all the equipment on the farm.
And on that auction day, I got a call from my uncle, who is my uncle by marriage. He was married to my aunt, my dad's sister. And this uncle has never called me in my entire life. So when I answer the phone and he says, "Hey, Christy, this is your Uncle John," my heart starts palpitating, like, oh my gosh, what's wrong? What happened? And it's like, "Hey, how you doing?" And he's all jovial, and he gets to asking me, "So was your son at an auction today?" And I'm like, and he said, "At a farm near Fargo, at where his shop is or something." And I'm like, "Yeah, I think he was." And he said, "Well, I was there too. Do you know that the shop he is renting from is my niece?" I'm like, "No. And did you know that my niece's mom used to date your dad?" And it was just, that connection was just amazing. And you had that happen that day too, right?
Yeah. Well, it was probably similar, because the landowner's dad came up and made the same connection, which I guess kind of goes back to business. And I'm sure that everyone, it's all the things that your parents say growing up that you've learn in your 20s and 30s actually means something, instead of just theoretical quotes that they've been quoting. But my dad and mom as well, but dad especially, always preached that relationships are paramount, and it's not what's, you know, it's who you know. And that's the Midwest nice thing, but we very intentionally built this business on the back of relationships and really treated every customer, I mean, the golden rule, as we'd want to be treated. So I think they're the two things that really created Grain Design success were essentially looking much bigger than we were. We spent a lot of time on our brand and marketing on social media and presenting in a way that suggested that we had really accomplished something, when in fact we were in a 1200 square foot garage. So we were able to fool enough people to create a relevant business off of it. But gaining those relationships and those, the landowner and the landowner's dad, ultimately become, you know, valuable friends and people I still talk to today. Not only about the property, but some moved away and we're getting them to move back to Fargo. And those are just the things that life is about, I guess. That's life's gold.
Yeah, absolutely. So you rent this property, and you had a conversation with the landowner talking about, you know, if you ever have a chance to sell, you want to move into that conversation?
When we signed the lease, I made her sign a first right of refusal. And I didn't really know what that was at the time. I just knew that I wanted to buy the property someday. And she kind of laughed at my face and said, well, that's fine. I'll sign it, but we're never going to sell. This is the family farm. And then it was fast forward 2 years later, she was getting remarried in Fargo, and they had a place in Fargo and a place in Minnesota Lakes area. And she did maintain this property for about a year, but it just became too much. And she approached us with the opportunity to buy it. So this was the third defining moment where we were kind of faced the crossroads of, at this time, we were paying a pretty reasonable rent, comparatively speaking, to what you would pay in like Fargo, North Dakota metropolis. So when we started it, we definitely couldn't afford the price she threw at us. So we started quickly exploring, what are we going to do to move? How can we cash flow this business in Fargo? And it wasn't possible. So we started exploring, how do we build south of Fargo? And by the time we were crunching numbers,
You were talking about if we had to move off this property and move back to Fargo where you had started, the cost was going to be enormous to do and build what you already had out there on the farm, right?
Exactly. And not to mention the 2 months of downtime that it would take to transition the shop and get everything back up to speed. So it was really weighing the pros and cons of, can we move and can we afford to move?
Both answers were probably no.
Yeah, we couldn't afford to stay and we couldn't afford to move. So we were really at a crossroads, and I remember many conversations like, oh, what do we do? And initially we told her, it's too expensive, we can't afford it. And it wasn't until she said, I've got a farmer that's willing to pay X, and you guys either will have to buy it or you'll have 4 weeks to get out, that it was about a day and a half that we sat around the shop kind of moping at first. And then we were having beers after work one day, and I guess we had the right number of beers, but ultimately we were trying to determine our even when we were in the garage and building from reclaimed wood, the thing we always said is start with what you have and where you are. So we just started looking around the property and what capacity do we have here. We really love spending time out there. We were shooting guns, hitting golf balls, staying past work just to enjoy the property itself. So we were like, well, how do we enjoy this experience with other people, or how do we share it? And we just kept spitballing ideas. The right number of beers, somehow a wedding venue came up. And if it was the right number, the wrong number at the time, we were like, hey, that's not a terrible idea. So we started expanding on that as a potential way to cash flow the property.
Every single group of guys sits around and they say, hey, I know what we'll do. We'll build a wedding venue. That is like the least non-guy thing I could think of, but a brilliant idea.
Yeah, the transition of how a furniture company becomes a wedding venue generally does not start like that, I presume. But it was out of necessity. And then we kind of looked back at the Grain Designs, kind of how we had grown. And it was taking a chance on the bleacher wood and kind of the community supporting us. And we live in a very supportive area. So we were just taking a chance on ourselves more than anything and hoping that we could make a go of it.
That's awesome. I love that story. So you made this announcement that you're going to build this wedding venue on the property. And you guys did such a phenomenal job of marketing and putting everything together. And you had gained some popularity. So Grain Designs starts promoting the Pines Wedding and Events venue. So tell us how that, from the time that how you booked, all that kind of stuff.
We were really piggybacking on the coattails of Grain Designs brand at that time. And just fortunately, we had set a standard of really great quality and a high customer service experience. So people drawing the parallel between wedding venue, they knew nothing. They were just taking the chance on it's maybe great quality and the customer service would be good. And fortunately, that was kind of what makes a great venue experience or wedding experience as well. And then, I mean, if you kind of think back to the bleacher wooden, what I started to allude to is if we can have 300-400 people on this property every weekend, and we can design this building and we can build all the tables and we can build the sliding barn doors, what better marketing than, you know, having 400-800 people dining at Grain Designs tables, walking by our shop and learning about our brand. So it was really a marketing play that we were thinking was going to build the Grain Designs brand. And I'm sure it's definitely helped, but we've been really fortunate. The Pines kind of took on a mind of its own, and that's grown into a business that now we've got two really sustainable businesses on the property and operates very independently from Grain Designs. So
Absolutely. And such a cool story of how you segued from one to the other. You ran into, I remember so many phone calls, you ran into a number of roadblocks and frustrating times through that process of the building of the pines. Can you walk us through and how you kept your tenacity and your sanity through all of that? What problems did you run into?
Yeah, I would say, well, even prior to that, I mean, just turning the gold or muck into gold, I guess, would be even thinking about the landowner approaching us about the property and saying, hey, like, you got 4 weeks to be out, and us knowing we can't afford it. That was a big blow. I was joking with one of the other gold miners here before. She was celebrating a win right before we started. And we always say at our company, if something great happens, you got 24 hours to celebrate. And if something bad, you got 24 hours to weep. In the time that we got the news that we had to move, essentially was what we were hearing when a farmer was buying this property, quickly turned to, okay, well, how can we stay, or what, how can we pivot? So that was really just changing our internal mentality instead of feeling like we were kicked to the ground. How can we pivot and make the best of a seemingly bad situation that turned out to be a great situation? There was many roadblocks. So really, the Pines, what we ended up building is a brand new 9,600 square foot facility that was not intended to be a brand new 9,600 square foot facility. We were looking around the property and what parts of the property were underutilized. So we rent a shop on the property. There was a house that my business partner at the time was living in. There's 12 grain bins that we had rented to a farmer, but there was a cold storage building that we stored some of our wood in, but largely was underutilized. So that was kind of the golden nugget on the property that we're like, that's the underutilized spot, and that's where we need to put the wedding venue. So we started with the design and hired a licensed architect to work alongside of us, design this wedding venue out of this cold storage, machinery storage building. And the goal is to start building this thing on June 1st, and somewhere around May 15th or April 15th, we were trying to put a stamp on these drawings to move forward with the bank. And he says, well, we should probably bring in a structural engineer just to make sure everything's going to be okay. And the structural engineer came over and said that if we were to build this in its current state, this building is 80% over, or 180% overstressed, which I'm not an engineer, and I don't know how a building is 180% overstressed and still standing. But that was the news we got. And the bill to reinforce it was $120,000, which was about 30% of the construction budget of this whole project. So that was really the second slap in the face, but the huge roadblock for this project that we're like, we just bought this property we couldn't afford, and now we can't afford to build a building. So we quickly started looking at alternatives and realized that we could redesign this building in a more cost-effective manner from ground up, which was without a doubt the success of the Pines and the biggest blessing that we were able to really create a space without limitations, as opposed to putting it in a 16-foot ceiling, low sidewalls. Now we've got 32-foot peaks and a really grand hall that it's just a cathedral-like space that really makes an impact. And had we not gotten that terrible news from an engineer that we were super, super angry at, we would probably be, the Pines surely wouldn't be what it is. So that was the first major roadblock.
Talk about gold, being in the mud and the muck, and then finding the gold that, oh my gosh, now we get to build or have to build a bigger and better building that turned out to be the saving grace. So how cool is that? And then
that that's business in a nutshell. I think we kind of look at that, obviously, is like a big roadblock, and businesses face roadblocks every day, but problems and solutions is, I mean, businesses every day is how many problems are you solving? That happened to be a really big problem that we were able to solve and kind of created this business from it. But ultimately life as well, I just think, is how many problems are you proactively solving to improve your life? And we were simply looking to improve our business. And then once we kind of arrived at this new design, we had had ongoing conversations with the bank that we thought we had a great relationship with. Prior to this, we hadn't had a bank. We had kind of really bootstrapped this thing. I mean, I was making $28,000 for the first 5 years of my business on a salary. So we weren't exactly, we were still stockpiling money away, but I mean, we weren't stockpiling enough to build a a really big wedding venue. We were really, really trying to bootstrap it and live on as little as we could to build this thing into something more. But we had continued to have conversations with this bank along the way about building this venue and keeping him in the loop. And he's like, oh, this deal's no problem. This is all going to work out. And SBA was also going to help out. And it went to SBA committee a few times and kept getting denied. So at that point, the banker started to reevaluate, like, oh, well, maybe I need to reevaluate. And ultimately, we realized that we had written a 30-page business plan for the Pines that he was going on reputation and he hadn't reviewed our financials at all and didn't realize that we didn't have a ton of money sitting in the bank. So we were about 2 weeks from closing on this property, which simultaneously was the construction loan to buy the property and build the building. And he said, we need to come up with about $185,000. And he said, I'm sure you've got friends or family, just ask them to borrow it to you. And we were like, really taken aback that he, at the suggestion that people have $185,000 laying around. And we went back and forth with him for a couple of days until we realized that he wasn't doing us any due diligence and started asking around town and interviewed three banks the next day and started a relationship with the bank that we're still here today. And I actually met with it's a new banker since then, but one of the bankers that we're working with now, we're working on what is now Pines Black, the new wedding venue that we're currently building, and kind of reviewing that proposal. And we were joking about interest rates and what is he going to do to sweeten this deal. And he said, looking back at your first deal, like, he did you such a favor that he was solely going on reputation alone as well. So he was doing us a massive favor, maybe because the other guy completely dropped us we upside down. We had no other option. So someone really took a chance on us. We secured some outside financing from friends and family, nor it wasn't the $185,000, but fortunately we had scraped together enough money to make this dream a reality. So
you ended up having great success and you finally got it built. It was supposed to be done by when, and it was done.
Yeah. I mean, that may have been a lack of communication. I think our contractor was trying to overpromise and just ultimately underdelivered, but we had broke ground. We still stayed pretty close to schedule. We broke ground on June 15th. My business partner was getting married on September 15th. So we were looking to build a wedding venue in 90 to 120 days. And around here, it's a tall tale to build houses in 90 days, which is a really fast construction schedule. But he had told us that it was possible and that it would be done by October 15th. So we took his word, and it wasn't until about October 10th that I started getting pestered by my business partner's fiance that things aren't looking like they're going to be done here in 5 days. So we had some very difficult conversation both internally and with the contractor that ultimately that wasn't the wedding day or wedding venue she dreamed of, but we were there till 2-3 in the morning for a couple of nights getting a construction site up to par that, I mean, we had the first awesome celebration September 15th, because October 15th was our first official wedding. So it was September 16th that I sat our contractor down and said, you've got 29 days, no questions asked. It has to be done because we've got a paying customer coming in. So probably on our part, just not knowing construction well enough, had unrealistic expectations, and he agreed to them. And it just, fortunately, it was an internal wedding and it didn't end in a disaster. But
yeah, it ends up kind of a cool story. And their pictures tell a story in and of themselves from their wedding. So you made a huge announcement. Want to share that with us? You kind of talked about it a little bit.
Yeah. So kind of as I alluded to, the Pines has grown into its own brand and taking on a mind of its own. So over the last 12 to 18 months, we've been looking at what expansion looks like. I mean, COVID kind of put a pause to that conversation, but we never stopped looking. And ultimately, we wanted to replicate this same concept elsewhere. And we started looking, you know, in the region, Bismarck, Sioux Falls, Lakes area, Minneapolis, and then realized the power of the Grain Designs brand, as well as our supply and demand locally. We have way more demand at our venue than we had supply or wedding dates. So we started looking micro, a little closer to this region, and even within a few mile radius. And we were really looking for like eight to 10 acre parcel with trees and a lot of the same characteristics and utilities, so we didn't have to trench in water, sewer, garbage, and all that. we ended up getting as close to home as the neighbor right next door, which is probably about 600 yards away. And she's got an 11-acre property. And I started conversations with her. And I had spent enough time on Google Maps parceling out these acres that when I zoomed out, I realized we had an underutilized part of our property on the west half that we weren't using at all. The grain bins were rented there, but the farmer, I mean, didn't use them every year. And it really was an underutilized space. So then we really started looking internally as can we expand on our own property? And ultimately that's the decision we arrived at. So our first building is Pines White, 9,600 square foot wedding venue. And then the farmhouse on the property serves as the bridal shower or the bridal suite rather, sorry. So this facility, to differentiate it, is slightly more intimate in the ceremony space. It's called Pines Black. The exterior will be all black. The interior largely the same, but it differs in the sense that there's an inside ceremony space and the bridal suite is also confined within the building. So everything at Pines Black happens under one roof, where Pines White has the benefit of still exploring the property a little bit. And we've built some other features into Pines Black to set that apart.
Just exciting. Yeah, you guys did a great job of teasing the audience, like, hey, we got a big announcement and we're going to do something cool. And what is the timeline for that then?
Yeah, well, that's the power of collaboration, because the first one, we did bring a videographer on board and spent some money to kind of promote Pines, the first announcement of the Pines, and that worked, and we had a great response to that. So we definitely didn't want to backpedal. We kind of doubled down on it and brought on even more help to kind of build the anticipation of an announcement and really put together spent a lot of time thinking through how do we announce this and keep people wanting more. So
awesome. Nice job. Do you have some advice for people that are, you know, they're rural entrepreneurs wanting to do something and are scared? What kind of tips and ideas can you give them?
Well, like I said, first is start where you are with what you have, I think, which is essentially, you know, value add or value engineering. What do you enjoy? What's in your house or what's on your current property that potentially could be sold, replicated, or maximized? And that was what we did with wood, is started building wood signs and then build wood tables. And now we build wood office furniture for large scale offices. So something that seems very small to start can absolutely snowball into something bigger. The idea of being rural, I think it can be a limitation in some regards, but with the power of the internet, I don't think rural is any such thing anymore. We were able to capitalize on much more cost-effective rent and the ability to buy a property that we could have never afforded in town because it was rural. So there's a lot of opportunities, maybe not looking 300 miles from the nearest city, but if you can be 25 miles from some great commerce, there is massive opportunity.
Yeah, I love how there's no way if you had built in Fargo that you would even have the Pines or the Pines Black for that matter. And you would have been thinking probably how do we expand our grain designs, and that's it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess even that, like, we get asked that question a lot. Like, why are you expanding a wedding venue as opposed to grain designs? We have equal passion for both. I'd just say we have the passion to grow business at this point and really create. We've got the opportunity to have some great team members. So ultimately now it does come a lot down to dollars and cents as to we're supporting a lot of families. What can we do to continue to support these families? But what does everyone want to be doing? Grain designs, the fact that we build X number of furniture every year, but everything is built by hands to scale it. You have to double the amount of hands, double the workspace, double the amount of overhead and inventory. And that's not necessarily the case with weddings. You can maximize our Monday through Thursdays. You can increase your rates a little bit. And I mean, there's just a lot of different ways to go about continuing to support our team.
Even the value added, like adding a photo booth or adding rental things. And
yeah. I do see a question about approaching what you should hire out and what roles would be divided. In the beginning, I was doing a lot of the accounting and quickly realized that was something I was capable of, and I was good at doing spreadsheets, but I hated pushing papers and doing numbers. And I started to get down on myself because I couldn't read a profit and loss statement and cash flow statements. So I didn't feel capable. So we hired an accountant, and we still have the same accountant today. That's probably the single greatest delegation we've ever done. If it's not giving you energy, that means it's probably taking your energy. Some things can be neutral, but if it's not giving you energy, your time can be more valuable elsewhere. So really, if it's not giving you energy, that's probably the first thing to look at delegating. If it's taking your energy, if it's taking your energy, I'd consult with someone tomorrow to figure out how you can delegate it.
Really good advice.
But beyond that, how do we divide the roles between us? That's kind of a unique story in itself. And when we started the Pines, the goal going in was simply to be the best. How to create the best wedding experience? How do we do things that aren't being done in this area? So we wanted to hire what we thought to be the greatest talent in the area. And we quickly approached the wedding venue that was kind of the paramount or the golden child wedding venue of the area, and approached their team and made them an offer to bring her over to run the Pines. And without a building and without seeing our business plan, you wouldn't believe it. She said no. But once the building was built or being built, it was about 3 or 4 months in, she did reapproach us and say, I think I would like to reconsider. And she came and asked for a job. So she actually had a kid in that time. So we were able to go away unscathed without paying 3 months of maternity leave. And she got the time she needed. And we had more time to really build and understand the business. So in the interim, one of my business partner's wives had done events at another venue. So she was helping me do tours and do some of the contractual stuff. But because we weren't able to hire her, I was really forced to develop these contracts, develop our standards, develop our expectations. How do we communicate with clients? So I really had the opportunity to, we say, shake hands and kiss babies, and really, how do we treat people? So when someone else came into our organization, she had a fantastic reputation, but we wanted to make sure it was up to our standards and not the reputation of someone else's facility. So it was kind of at the point that I was giving wedding tours, and we were probably within 2 months of our first, like really getting into the wedding season in March and April, that brides started to ask me questions about, like, oh, how are we going to set up our day? And what does the schedule look like? And that was the point that I was like looking for the easy button, and I need out. I need to hire someone immediately. And that was around the same time that Emily, was our event manager, now our GM, and one of the event managers approached us to take on that role.
Thank goodness. Another piece of gold. Like, she turned you down and you're like, oh crap, I guess I'm going to have to do this, which it turned out to be a blessing. Oh, now I got to learn this so I can be a better manager and I can do better for our facility. That's another great takeaway.
I think it's really, I mean, everyone in this group obviously knows that, but I think that is simply perspective. There's a lot of people that would come out of that. It was a miserable time. Like, I wouldn't say I was enjoying it. I was learning a lot, and I'd thrive in a really busy, high-paced environment, but I was biting off more than I could chew and was not home. So as terrible as that was, to look back and realize the blessings in it, I think takes a lot of reflection. And that's the difference between the gold miner, someone that's willing to look for the positive in maybe a negative situation.
Absolutely. I think it's funny that you were like, okay, I'm out of my element. These people want to know how to do the wedding and all that. And it goes back to what were three guys thinking and starting a wedding venue, but it turned out to be, well, and were you married at that time already? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, I think I was.
Just or so newly married, but yeah, funny. I thank you so much, Blaine, for your time and your commitment and your insight.
Lisa, you said, thank goodness I don't have to do it again. And you're absolutely right. Thank goodness. We do have a fantastic team, but this is also, I mean, very similar to the first time that we kind of get to reinvent the wheel here. And the fact that we are doing it on the same property is really forcing us to look at this and say, okay, you got to look at it from 10 people's perspective. If you're the client, if you're the guest experience, the cars driving in, like, how do you know where to point people? But really, our fear was announcing Pines Black, that then all of a sudden Pines White, becomes like, oh, well, Pines Black is now the premier wedding venue and no one wants to get married at the wedding venue their friends have. Everyone is going to want to get married at Pines Black. So fortunately, we took the time to kind of think about this all ahead of time and had the staff now to really to break it down with. They know the wedding industry far better than we do. But how do we differentiate it? So we actually went smaller with our guest count, which building Pines White, that was the one thing we were doing better than everyone else. We were going to have 400 people because no one else except for a hotel was going to do it. But we don't have the capacity to park 500 people. So if we went a little smaller, added some more amenities, and really kind of take some notes from what's working in the cities, what's working in Nashville, what's working on the West Coast, what's drawing people in, and really creating unique experience moments on our door of both the Pines and Grain Designs. It has nothing to do with furniture or weddings. It's how do we create a unique experience for our team and our clients. So we really try to be an experience company and think about the experience that we're providing. And that could be in the product as well. Something like the geographic coordinates being stamped into where the wood is reclaimed from. I mean, that becomes a conversation piece and what are they going to talk about at the Pines? We say we want to be remarkable because anything worth making remarkable is remarkable. It could be negatively remarkable, but that's not our goal. But to be remarkable is our expectation. The fact of the matter is none of us really know what our dream is, because I thought I was a farmer. Mm-hmm. And then I thought I loved design. And then I realized I love just building businesses and kind of we've had failures as well. I wouldn't say it's a massive failure, but we created a product at Grain Designs in which we created a bunch of all 50 states, little home signs that we were selling at markets. So we created an online company, closinggifts.com, to really sell those nationwide. And we just never invested the time and energy. And it cash flows positive, just very little, with my brother's help, fortunately. So, I mean, in many ways, it is a failure that it's not some huge successful business. And it does have a lot of potential, but we quickly found out that wasn't giving us energy and it was taking energy away from the Pines and Grain Designs and things we like growing. And now we're having conversations of, yesterday I was on an install with one of our Grain Designs team members, and we always get asked why we're doing the wedding venues and not expanding Grain Designs. And one of our key members at Grain Designs, if we were going to scale to be a $2-3 million company at Grain Designs, we really have to start to isolate to commercial furniture. We wouldn't be able to do one-off custom tables. It would have to be a much larger scale to the Microsofts, the Googles, and you know, small to medium-sized businesses that we can do full office build-outs. And the Grain Designs team just really isn't interested in mass production. We do some of it because it pays the bills. And I mean, those are the great projects for us in a year, but what we all actually enjoy is very different than churning out 40 of the same desk. So what I enjoy selling is the cash flow stuff, but the experience that we like to create is very different. And our team members as well, just, we wouldn't have a business if we tried to scale to be $2 million because we wouldn't have team to do it with.
I love that you're saying that, because you're talking about money isn't everything. Like, if you didn't have those, if you're only working for money, it takes the joy out of what you're doing. So can you talk and share what, like, some of your best experiences that you've had?
Well, money definitely doesn't buy happiness. Money does buy freedom, and it can buy experiences and family reunions and time away. I definitely sacrificed a lot of not only family time away, but family time here in my home and with friends. We got a lot of, fortunately, we were at work with our best friends. We had that benefit, but we sacrificed a lot for the first 5-6 years to kind of build even through the Pines. And we know with Pines Black that we're going to be boots on the ground building tables for 400 people and barn doors and what have you. So yeah, the experiences are, that we look back on still, are those late nights that we're sitting around having beers, dreaming of a wedding venue, when we finally made enough money to take our whole team to Grand Designs team probably couldn't afford it anymore with our Pine staff, but we took everyone to Mexico and did a week-long trip with our team, or the owners and our wives and girlfriends. I mean, really traveling even to Western North Dakota for an install. So generally, if we're doing an install outside the area, we're taking a vehicle big enough that'll fit golf clubs, and taking one extra person or maybe a couple extra people that wouldn't generally need to go on the install, just so we can make a trip out of it. So, I mean, we're always trying to push the envelope of work and play, but I don't necessarily believe in a work-life balance. I think there's just a work-life ebb and flow, because there's months where we're going to work 80 hours a week for the whole month and might even have a 100-hour week in there. And once it's back to 40, that seems pretty easy. And you almost seem like you're not giving enough. But there's also times where we can work 20 hours a week and enjoy the lake or go golf at 2 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon because the weather improved. So just kind of defining what makes you happy and then working to create a schedule that facilitates that.
That's awesome. I do have one more question. Do you have a favorite project that you've worked on at Grain Designs?
We ask that about every 6 months in our team meetings. Sometimes it's a favorite project based on what was built. 95% of the time, it's a favorite project based on who it was for, the relationships along the way. So we've got our biggest client to date was down in St. Louis, and we wrapped that project here in June. And Grant and I went down there and installed it. And I really hadn't had contact with these people throughout the whole project. My business partner, Grant, kind of coordinated it. When we got down there, we just asked them, why the hell would you take a chance on a company based on a Google photo that you'd never met and knew nothing about? And they had read enough Google reviews that they trusted us, and the camaraderie that they felt in our initial Zoom calls was enough to secure our biggest job to date. When we got down there, we were selfishly, I guess we think that North Dakota and Minnesota is like the paramount for hospitality, but they proved us wrong because they were wildly accommodating. We had a phenomenal time going to Cardinals games and golfing with them. And I mean, I would say that our top 10 projects from a commercial standpoint are all people that we are in contact with on a monthly basis, not about projects, but either sending stuff back and forth, or when we go out to Hazen to do a project, we're staying at her lake place, which is fully stocked with meat sticks and pizzas and beer. And, you know, she knows all of our favorite things. And it's just those relationships that even our shop team, who doesn't leave the shop as often, remembers, because we're talking about it. We've got a campaign from our table to yours, which we started about 5 years ago. And the premise was that you've put food on our table, we want to put food on yours. So a couple times a year, we will choose a family in need, whether that be through stewardship or hardship, that they need a custom table, and we'll build them a table. Or sometimes their needs are different and we'll build them something else. But we were able to build multiple tables for people. And oftentimes those are the team's favorite projects, just because, you know, they got the opportunity to do something that most people don't get to do. And that's give away their time and talents for someone in need.
I love that story. Do you still do the from my table to yours, or from our table to yours?
We do. We don't actively market it as much anymore, just because we're mostly just watching the news and then reaching out and seeing what we can do to help. It, ultimately, our goal is always to do the right thing. And now we get so many inquiries for, can you donate this? Can you donate that? There's this charity. So we do so much charitable giving throughout the year, not of cash, but of our products, that we're always trying to do something.
I thank you so much for your time. Again, I may be partial, but I love your story. I love the tenacity. It's just cool how you guys came together and made all this happen. Probably the biggest thing I'm most proud of over and over and over again is hearing what great guys you are, and all the work aside and all the notoriety or publicity that you guys get as a mom. For me, it means the world to me to hear that you guys are good people. So,
yeah, it's been a fun journey.
Again, I know I'm partial, but Wasn't that a good story? Well, stories, actually. If you want to know more about Grain Designs and their amazing handcrafted products for businesses and homes, you can find them at graindesigns.com or on social media. If you want more information about the Pines Wedding and Events venue, where you can have the most amazing wedding in the Fargo-Moorhead area or host a phenomenal event in a great luxury environment, you can look for them at thepinesvenue.com. Well, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this, let us know, or better yet, leave a review and a comment so others might know they'd enjoy this too. If you'd like to hear more great rural entrepreneurial stories, make sure you subscribe so you're notified when to come back for more. This interview took place in a group called the Gold Miners, where members meet in a weekly mastermind. Some weeks, we hear rural success stories of people finding their gold. And other weeks, we work on our own personal growth and development and creating a positive mindset to mine for our personal gold. You know, looking for the good things that can come out of the dirt and the muck of things that happen in our life. If you'd like to watch the complete unedited version of this and other podcasts where you can hear the questions asked by fellow gold miners or ask questions yourself of future guests, join us in the Gold Miners. Check it all out by going to beagoldminer.com. Now, go mine your gold.